Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, I'm sharing the 4 editing mistakes you must make to grow as a photographer. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, a weekly podcast for those who believe that moments matter most and that a beautiful photo is more than just a sum of its settings. A show for those who want to do more with the gear they have to take better photos today. And now, your host, Raymond Hatfield.
Welcome back to this episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you are new here, welcome. I am Raymond Hatfield. I am the host, and I'm also a wedding photographer here in Indianapolis. I actually started the podcast just to have a way to kind of talk to world-class photographers and find out how they see the world, as I always kind of felt like a bit of an imposter. I had went to film school for like motion pictures, like movies. Now, the technicals between the two, they translated right over. But everything else that I would have learned if I had went to a school specifically for photography, well, I never learned any of that. So this is kind of my way of learning photography through community and those who came before me. So wherever you are in your photography journey, I just want to say welcome. Now, I don't know about you, but I got into photography before I got into editing. So for years, I would go out and I would shoot and then I'd be done. And then I'd go out and shoot and then I'd come back and be done. Now, what came out of the camera was, well, that was just what the image was. It was done, right? I just considered it done at that point. And I think that I got there because in film school, I shot on film, on actual film. And because we were students, we had no money to afford to color time our film, and we could only do what's called a one light process, which meant that what I shot in camera had to come out how I wanted the final product to look. And because we didn't have the money to shoot all the film that we wanted, and trust me, we wanted to shoot a lot of film, that is actually the reason why I bought my first DSLR, which was the Canon XT back in late 07, 08. So shooting motion picture film is extremely expensive. You know, they say, you know, when you have a photography camera, every time you take a picture, it costs a dollar, right? It costs about a dollar because you have to develop it and you got to print it. But with motion picture film, you're taking 24 pictures every second. So it gets expensive very fast. But I wanted something that would help me to see light better, to be able to, you know, capture the images that I wanted to capture in camera, because I wanted to be done with it. After I pressed that shutter button, I just wanted to be done. I had no intentions of ever editing my photos. So I just didn't, right? At the time, I thought I'm going to, you know, be a cinematographer. I don't even want to worry about all the technicals of photography. I'm just going to shoot and then be done. And then that's it. So I shot in JPEG and I just jumped into the deep end. Because, you know, you could shoot in RAW, and I should have been shooting in RAW, but I thought, if I'm never going to edit these images, why wouldn't, like, that's just an extra step right there, because then I'd have to convert the photos into a JPEG anyway. So I might as well just shoot in JPEG. I remember how excited I was the day that my camera, the Canon XT, showed up from eBay. I remember how much I paid for it. I actually, before this, I tried looking back on eBay to see how much I paid for it, but your purchase history only goes back to 2018, so I couldn't find out. But it was several hundred dollars, right? It was a lot of money. And I opened up the box, and unfortunately, there was no memory card inside. Maybe I wasn't even thinking about a memory card because I was just so used to film or whatever, but I had to drive down. You know, you can't just sit there with a brand new camera and no memory card. So I had to drive down to Best Buy and buy a 256 megabyte card, which I believe held, you know, like 200 photos or something like that. It was like nothing. So at the time, I was living on Hollywood and La Brea in LA. So when I got back to my apartment, I was like, I'm good to go, right? The battery had charged a little bit. I now had a fresh memory card. I went outside to go take some photos, and there was this It was a Iraqi war protest. And I thought, oh, well, this is perfect. So I shot it, and I actually still have those photos. And you know what? I'm actually going to I will post those photos in the show notes of this episode. So if you want to check out, I mean, literally my first DSLR photos, then you can go ahead and see them in the show notes of this episode. If you're an Apple Podcast, you can just swipe up. There'll be a link to go to the show notes from there. If not, you can just go to beginnerphotographypodcast.com and go to the show notes for this episode. But you'll see that, I mean, my exposure was just all over the place. And I thought, you know, you're not cool unless you're shooting in manual focus. So none of my photos are sharp. but side note, I vividly remember shooting that day. And I remember thinking, like, why are these photos not coming out the way that I want them to? But now, like, just having looked at the settings yesterday, right, going back through all these photos, it's cool to be able to pinpoint now, like, oh, well, if you're shooting in the shade at ISO 100, I mean, that's why you couldn't get the shutter speed high enough. You know, there just simply wasn't enough light coming in the camera. And it's cool. It's cool to see that now, right? Like hindsight's always 20/20. So anyway, the point being here, let that be a lesson to not give up. If right now you're at a point to where you're thinking, oh my gosh, my technicals, like, it just isn't making sense. Just don't give up, you know, and just keep at photography, and you're going to get where you want to get. I promise you. Anyway, point is, I always wanted to be the photographer who got it right in camera. I never want to have to edit my photos, right? I always saw editing as a means to fix whatever mistakes I had in an image, which, I mean, when I say that out loud, really makes me feel crazy. Even though today I still don't, I don't do a lot of Photoshop work. I spend very minimal time in Lightroom. You know, editing isn't the main thing for me. Photography is still the main thing for me, but I've just realized now that just the importance and the role that editing has in making a better photo. And it has nothing to do with fixing any sort of mistakes. But anyway, so years later, right? I was living in California, obviously, living out in LA. I had moved here to Indiana, and I started to dip my toes into the editing waters, you could say, when I bought Apple's Aputure, which at the time was a Lightroom competitor before Apple killed it off because Lightroom was just exploding. But I bought it not as a form or not as a way to edit my photos, but simply as a form of photo management. I was starting to have so many photos and so many folders on my hard drives that I just simply needed a faster way and a more visual way to be able to find a photo that I was looking for, well, fast. Now, bored one day, right? I had went out shooting. Bored one day, I come back, and I'm just sitting on my computer, and I start playing with some of the sliders, and, well, that's how I got my start in editing, right? I started to have some fun, started to see what things could do, just started poking around, and that was that. So looking back recently at some of my earliest photos, what I'm going to share with you today are the four biggest mistakes that I definitely made editing that I think made me a better photographer today. And these are the mistakes that I see new photographers making all the time. So if you're listening, pay attention, get a pen and a paper, or more pen and paper, to be able to write these things down, because these, even though they're mistakes, I truly believe that you have to make them in order to grow. So we'll get into it. Mistake number one that I made was heavy saturation. As I mentioned in the beginning, I never wanted to edit my photos. So everything, or every photo that I had saw of mine for years was simply just what came out of camera. So when I finally started editing, a whole new world opened up to me. And I no longer, again, saw editing as a means to fix a mistake, but I saw it as a tool to enhance the story that I wanted to tell. And nothing enhances a story or a photo like bringing some life into it with a little bit of extra saturation. Am I right? Like, whoa, this looks really cool. Let's go ahead and keep going. So you go until you just maxed out that slider and you think to yourself, like, oh, is this as high as it goes? Like, this could go higher. Come on. So then you stare at it for a few minutes and you're looking at it and you're thinking, okay, maybe this is a little bit too high. Maybe I should turn it down just a bit. But now your eyes have already adjusted to this Technicolor world that you have created, that even like the base saturation of the image that you were previously happy with now looks void of any color. So you pop up that saturation to about plus 60, you know, just a touch more than half the way up. And you think, yeah, I mean, this still looks 100% natural. It's not black and white, and it definitely doesn't look as crazy as having it 100%, you know, all the way up on the saturation. So then you export that photo and you upload it to Facebook, and then you just go about your day and you're like happy with your photography, and you think, oh man, I'm making some really good strides. And then at the end of the day, one of your friends comments saying that your photo looks like a rainbow threw up all over your image because it's so colorful. It's crazy. But trust me, you are not alone here. Look, if editing is a new world for you, then this is just simply human nature to press buttons and see what things can do. You went too far. Who cares? You know? Now you know. Now you know how much saturation is too much saturation. You know what? Actually, I'm going to go ahead and share a photo of mine that I remember posting and to this day is still tough to look at. It is so heavily saturated. So again, another reason to check out the show notes for this episode. A lot of my earliest photos, lots of mistakes. So please be sure to check those out. Now, to avoid going overboard on saturation, right? You're here now. You've come to terms. You're at step, you know, two or whatever, or seven, whatever, like acceptance. You're like, okay, I have definitely gone overboard with the saturation of this image. What do I do? What do I do at this point? How do I get better at this? How do I train my eyes to get better at this without going black and white, right? Without going the exact opposite direction. Now for this, I think that this is a pretty simple solution. What I did in the early days was I used a reference photo. Now, this is just something to look at that you found before you started editing, right? A photo that you found on Pinterest, Google, whatever it was, that has a similar amount of color that you want. You look at this photo and you think, yeah, those are good colors, good exposure. This is a good image. And this is going to be your base. This is going to be a reference photo. And then, you know, go ahead and do side by side, edit the photo that you want to edit next to this reference photo, not as a way to copy it, but just again, as a way to be that scale, right? Is this too much color? Is this not enough color? And then go ahead and export it just to see how close you are to those photos compared to, or those colors compared to the other photo. Now, oftentimes, even still today, I will edit a little bit on the more colorful side, but editing with a reference photo does help just keep things in check. So that's what I would do to solve mistake number one when it comes to editing. Now, mistake number two is a little bit tougher to solve, but mistake number two is just a poor use of selective color. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, like, whew, thank goodness I am way past this phase. I am no longer doing selective color. But I still want you to listen in because I think that selective color works. I do. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think that selective color works only in certain circumstances. And that's what I want to talk about. So if you don't know, if you're thinking, well, what is selective color? I definitely haven't gotten past this phase yet. Selective color is just simply when like the entire photo is in black and white, but a single portion is in color, or a single, you know, predominant color is in color throughout the whole image. So like everything that is red is still red, but the rest of the image is in black and white. So, you know, I'm sure that you can think of an image in your head at this point. Now, why is this a mistake? Well, I think that the selective color kind of becomes a natural progression after we kill our photos with oversaturation, because we continue to play around in editing. And I think what we're doing when we're editing for new photographers is that you're just looking for something. You're looking for the one thing, the one slider that is really just going to take your photos from pretty good to jaw-dropping, because you've realized like how quickly, how much you can do with your camera. So now having this entirely new element of editing, and it can be low stress because you can be at home, you can be in your pajamas, you know, it can be late at night. You don't have to be there in person thinking, what do I do next? What do my settings do? How should I post this person? You actually have time to think about these things. It feels a little bit more creative, and you want to spend a little bit more time there taking these photos from pretty good to jaw-dropping, right? And really, I don't know, up your skills as a photographer. You want to create photos that make people stop in their tracks and take notice. That's what every photographer wants. So I get that. You want to just document the unique way that you see the world. So that's when you find, you know, how to do selective coloring, you get all excited. But I guess before that, you get there, after this whole oversaturation thing, now you're going through Lightroom, still looking for that one slider, and then that's when you find it. You find this, the hue, saturation, or the HSL sliders, right? And you see that you can turn down the saturation of an entire color. So now you're looking at a nature photo that you took that maybe it's void of any green. And you think to yourself, well, this just simply looks ridiculous. Like, why would anybody share this photo? And then you just move on, right? It's no big deal. Like, you think, why would anybody use this? And then, like, it was meant to be, you know, maybe a few days later, maybe a few weeks later, but you see an image online of a busy farmer's market, and the whole image is black and white, but right there to the left is a woman wearing a red dress holding a bright red apple. Again, the rest of the image, black and white, but there's a red dress and a red apple. And it makes you stop. And you stare at this photo, and at that moment, the light bulb goes off, and you think, that's it. That's it. I know how to make this. I remember going through the HSL sliders. I can do this. So then guess what? For the next 3 months, every single one of your images that you share is selective color. So things like, I don't know, just somebody's eyes are in color, right? Just the blues of somebody's eyes are in color, or just the orange of somebody's shirt is in color. And you think, man, this is so cool. It's just a little something extra to grab, your viewer's attention. And you love it. You love it. Until somebody leaves a comment on your photo, you know, saying, oh, I remember when I first started editing, in a condescending way. And it kind of makes you question, like, what you're doing. And then you take a break from selective editing. You think, well, like, why am I feeling this way? Why does everybody give this such a bad rap? Like, it's really cool. This is fun. It's unique. Nothing like this is going to come out of camera. But, you know, somebody's going to comment that, and then there's going to be a bunch of other comments underneath it, because selective coloring gets a really, really, really bad rap. Now, I want to set the record straight real quick and again say that I think that selective coloring, it works. I think that it works when it's done in the right way. So in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group, Jason is a master at selective coloring. Honestly, before I saw Jason's photos, I thought to myself, nope, never doing selective coloring. It's a party trick. It doesn't make for any sort of good photos at all, until he continually posted photos of his with selective coloring. Even though people would say, like I said, you know, oh, I remember when I first started editing, he kept at it. But the thing about Jason is that he started using it in a way that lends itself to the photo. He uses it in a way that enhances the story of what is already happening in the image, rather than what I did in the beginning, which was just look at a photo and ask, well, what color am I going to use here? Without any regard to what the story was that I was trying to tell. And that's why I think that this is a mistake that you have to make to get better at editing. You need to learn that these tools that you have at your disposal can quite literally make or break an image, regardless of how well it was actually shot. Selective color can quite literally take a great photo and make it garbage. But it can also take a lackluster photo and make it something really special. So please, even though I said that this is a mistake, if you haven't, I want you to give it a try. But just be sure that you're using it to enhance the story of what's already going on in the photo and not for its novelty. Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step, and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos. Okay. Got myself a little drink there. Mistake number three that you have to make before becoming a better photographer is just simply not thinking about skin tones. So skin tones are how the color, brightness, and saturation of my subject's skin look in the photo. And if you're anything like me, you may think, well, why would I want to change the color of my subject's skin? That's their skin. And you're right. You're absolutely right. That's not what we're doing here. You're right to a degree. But there is a time sooner than later that if you haven't experienced it already where your scene is a bit unsaturated, right? Just naturally, like fall leaves perhaps, right? Like at the end of fall, like the fall leaves are pretty much gone. And when you take your photo and you up the saturation of that image so that it can have a little bit of life to it, well, then your subject's skin starts to look like a tomato. Right? So that's kind of the skin color that I'm talking about here. Totally not what you wanted to go for, but you know, that's what happens. Or let's say, now this happens to me all the time. You're photographing a couple on a local, like a nature trail. And then when you look at the photos when you get home, their skin is so green that they look like they're about to lose their lunch. It's terrible. So when editing skin tones, we're not trying to change the look of their skin. We're just simply trying to make it look natural. That's what we want. Now, the problem here is that, like, you don't go out on a nature walk or you don't go out to, like, this beautiful sunset and look at somebody and think, whoa, what happened to your skin? Like, why is it all green or why is it all red? It's our cameras, they just simply see light different than our eyes. And because of that, they also render colors different than what our eyes do. This can cause less than the desirable effects that we're looking for when we're editing. Nobody wants to see a photo of themselves looking like they have straight up Oompa Loompa DNA because they're so orange. Nobody wants that. This is something that really, not until the last few years, I actually started taking more serious. And now that I have, well, I look back at some of my old photos in the same way that I did with oversaturation. Like, what was I thinking? Like, how did I ever think that this was okay to deliver to a client? But you don't know what you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. In fact, once again, check out the show notes. I'm going to post a picture that I'm thinking of right now. One of the first weddings that I ever edited. I mean, I just wasn't even thinking about skin tones or anything. And you'll see the zombie skin of the bride and her bridesmaids that I'm embarrassed that I ever delivered. But I did. So you can check out that photo in the show notes and you can see what sort of mistakes I made. So editing skin tones is just simply what allows you to, you know, or one thing that I do with when editing skin tones is that it allows you to lower the brightness of the overall photo, right? Just with the exposure. So you just go up to exposure and you can just bring it down for the overall photo. So now it looks underexposed. But then with skin tones, you can bring up the luminance to make your subjects pop, right? When their skin is brighter, then they pop, right? But again, got to make sure that they don't look like they're radioactive or anything. And I think that doing this, right, bringing down the whole exposure and then just raising up the luminance of skin is just a much more subtle and honestly, it's a more natural replacement for the reason why most new photographers use a vignette, right? A vignette, if you don't know, it's like tunnel vision on your subject. The edges are dark, and then that just brings your subject in full focus of your attention. But doing it this way, I just think looks a lot more natural. Now, despite knowing how important knowing how to edit skin tones are, when I asked you, the members of the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group, what you struggled with most when it comes with editing, you overwhelmingly still said skin tones, which tells me that there's this huge gap in knowing how to effectively edit skin tones without ruining the rest of the image. Now, if you have never thought about skin tones before, you may be wondering, all right, like I'm intrigued now. Like, what have I been doing wrong to my photos all these years? Like, how do I get better photos? Well, there's unfortunately no skin tone slider. It's not you just like 0 to 100 and then when you turn to 100, everybody looks great. There's nothing like that. If only it was that easy. As you can imagine, everybody's skin is different. And the way that skin is reflected in different types of light changes how skin tones are reproduced in a photo. So the same person, you know, just take me for example. You could take a photo of me in different lighting, where in one, you know, let's just say that they were, you know, a few months apart, right? In one photo, it's the summertime, I have a nice tan, it's looking good. But then you take another photo of me at the end of winter where I haven't seen the sun in 5 months. I'm a totally different person, right? Well, I'm the same person, but my skin is totally different in the photos. And that right there is why skin tones are so tricky to edit, because it's not just like, oh, you know, Caucasian skin, you do this, you know, it's not like that, because everybody is different. Every single person can have different skin tones. But again, that is why skin tones are so tricky to edit. But I want to help you out. Okay, so next week, check this out. I am starting a free 5-day challenge. And it's called Skin Tones Made Simple. I want skin tones to be made simple for you. So to sign up, there's a link in the show notes, so reason number 4 or 5, whatever it is, to check out the show notes. You can join the free challenge. You can also join the free challenge at skintonesmadesimple.com. That's skintonesmadesimple.com. So starting next Monday, I am going to send you, it is my best tips for editing skin tones, and I'm going to deliver you those tips right to your inbox. So you're going to get them every day, 5 days. 5 my best tips. Then what we're going to do is we're all going to share our photos actually in the Facebook group so that we can grow and encourage each other. And I will actually be doing Facebook Lives all week to answer all of your questions that pop up along the way. Because as I said, everybody's skin tone's different. You know, you're going to have questions. So I'm really looking forward to this challenge. I haven't shared these tips, I don't think, anywhere else. So you will be the first to get them. So again, you can sign up for this free challenge at skintonesmadesimple.com. And I cannot wait to see how quickly the quality of your images take off. All right, mistake number four. We are rounding third base. We're coming home right now with mistake number four. And that is, we are not culling enough. So culling is choosing what photos you want to use, what photos you want to edit, what photos you want to deliver. There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar. So me, I will go to an engagement session and I'll probably take 400 to 500 photos. And then when I get back, I will cull that down. That's cull, C-U-L-L. I'll cull that down to 100 or so to edit and deliver to my couple. Now that means that I'm choosing 300 to 400 photos that I don't want to give my client. Now, this is incredibly important to growing as a photographer for many reasons. The most important reason is that it forces you to look at your photos critically, with a critical eye, forcing yourself to answer, is this photo good or bad? And that is important for a few reasons. Because for either answer, there is a reason. Whether you say, yes, this photo is good, or no, this photo is bad, there is a reason behind your answer. And those photographers who pay attention to the reasons why they either like or dislike a photo are the photographers who will grow the fastest. Now, the reason you don't want to include a photo may not even be because it's a mistake that you made or something, you know, they're just duplicates. Let's say, okay, so you took 4 or 5 photos in a row, and even if they're all in focus, they're all properly exposed, choose just 1 or 2 tops if there's like a different moment in there. Okay? I know that when we're first getting started in photography, it can be challenging to get the technicals right. So when you get a photo in focus and the exposure is pretty good, you just think, it's a winner. That's it. Chose. This is going on Facebook. But a good photo is more than just having a good exposure and having good focus. Otherwise, everybody would just leave their camera in auto mode and just snap away. A good photo has some sort of intention behind it. So therefore, if you take 4 or 5 of the, you know, quote unquote, same photo, the same moment, all right, just choose 1 photo. If you can, choose as few photos as you can out of that moment to deliver. Now, you may think to yourself, all right, like this sounds easy. Like this is a no-brainer. Like, well, of course, like why would I deliver 5 of the same photo? And I get it, but I think if you were to ask any parent out there, myself included, to choose between 80 photos that they took of their kid, then they would just, you know, look at all of them and just keep them all. It's impossible to get rid of 79 of those photos, even if it's just them playing in the sand at the beach, doing the exact same thing. You know, you didn't move, they didn't move. It'd be impossible to get rid of 79 of those photos. We have, as photographers, an emotional attachment to our photos. So, you know, you add in that element of it's our children, and that's a whole nother thing. But even without that, even if it's not our children, we still have a hard time deciding what photos to deliver. Second guessing ourselves, right? Maybe they would rather have this full smile on the border of laughter, or maybe they would like to look more stoic in front of the camera. Who knows? These aren't my photos. These are their photos. You know, what would you do? What would you do? And you do what feels right. That's really the only thing that you can do, is that you just do what feels right. And you will get better at this. The more that you do it, the faster you will be, the better choices you will make, and also the less photos you will have to edit. So that's great. Another bonus of really studying your culling choices is that you will see patterns in your shooting. You know, maybe you like, you know, certain ways of shooting more so than others. And then you just start shooting in that way that you know that you like. And when you start shooting in the way that you know that you find pleasing, then you will be more intentional and take less photos. And when you take less photos, it means that you have less photos to cull through. So again, saving you time. A good photo is about intention, not just taking as many photos as possible. So that's why this is really the one aspect of editing that really has the potential to help you just truly grow as a photographer itself in a way that, you know, it has the potential of helping you grow as a photographer in a way before you take your shot and not after the fact, which is kind of like with the rest of everything else, right? With the oversaturation, with the selective color, with the skin tones, all those things have to be done after the fact. But culling, learning how to do it more efficiently, being critical about your photos is going to help you become a better photographer before the image is captured. So let's go ahead and recap what we learned today and the four editing mistakes you must make to become a better photographer. Again, mistake number one, oversaturation. If a little is good, a lot must be great. It's not true. Selective coloring. It will definitely make your photos stand out, but is it making your photos stand out in the way that you want them to? That part takes work. Mistake number three, skin tones. Are you photographing an Oompa Loompa? If not, you probably are doing skin tones all wrong. And you can sign up for my free 5-day challenge at skintonesmadesimple.com. You have nothing to lose by signing up, so I expect you all to be there. Mistake number four, not culling enough. Not culling enough means that you are shooting more than you need to be. It means that you are delivering more photos and, you know, causing overwhelm to your clients, if that's who you're shooting for. It means that you're spending more time editing, and it means that you're not being as intentional with your images. So these are all great things that we can all work on together. These are all things that will, once you go through them, like these are the fires that you have to go through to get to the other side of becoming a better photographer. So I really hope that this episode helped you, maybe give you a little bit of motivation or inspiration, or just gave you some insight into what you may be facing here in the future. So that is it for this week. Again, sign up for the free Skin Tones Made Simple challenge at skintonesmadesimple.com. You have nothing to lose. So I'm excited for you. Go ahead and sign up. That starts next week. Until next week, I want you to make do. I want you to make more. I want you to do more. And I want you to make do with the gear that you got, because I promise you, it is better than you think. Talk soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.